Hello, Yevanai Sisson. Welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. Glad to be back.
Yevanai Sisson got her college degree from the Yerevan State University of Armenia, studied economics, applied to the U.S. State Department for a scholarship for advanced study, and was accepted and sent to the University of Missouri. She did well, stayed to get a Ph.D., written a lot, began to work at Franklin and Marshall. She's recently been studying writing on the federal multi-trillion-dollar relief programs as the pandemic shut down the economy. She and many others have found that the federal government is continuing their 50-year trend of subsidizing big business, the banks, fossil fuel industry, quote, the private sector, and their executives and main beneficiaries. Those people have done really well in the pandemic and getting federal money. But as to small business and the great majority of the people, health has been erratic, small. There's lots of precariousness and fear. As to solutions to the crisis, she called for being much more strict as to help for businesses and rich people. As for the great majority of wage earners who are not rich, she suggested we emulate the European states that also shut down their economies to deal with the virus and just made payments to ordinary people and their businesses sometime, but to pay their salaries. And in the longer term, when the virus is under control, she calls for implementing the Green New Deal to build clean sun and wind power in the economy, as well as have universal medical care for all, child care, basic affordable housing. So, yeah, but let's talk about why having a real safety net and having universal medical care, housing, enough food, the people will still want to work. First, though, let's speculate some about the future. What's likely to happen to the U.S. economy, and what are the political potentials going forward?
It is very difficult to tell what will happen in the economy, how long the downturn will last, how quick or not quick the recovery will be. A lot of that depends on the public health response. So very early on, my colleague Randy Ray and I, we wrote a very short piece on the response to the crisis, and we basically argued that the economic response should be sort of secondary to the public health response, which, you know, we should have ramped up our testing capabilities, worked on developing reliable antibody tests, which apparently we still don't have reliable ones. We should have increased our temporary hospital capabilities, ensuring that rural areas that don't have regular hospitals had access to health care. You know, we should have guaranteed health care for all COVID-related illnesses and so on. The public health response should have been our first line of defense, and we have not done a very good job at that. And now that we're reopening the economy, you know, the stock market today went sky high again because we are reopening the economy. It's not really clear whether the economy will actually be open, because it's not clear that people will go out to restaurants if restaurants are open, whether they will go out to stores if stores open up. None of that is guaranteed. You know, airline stocks have gone up, but again, are people going to start traveling? Are they going to risk taking a plane flight? I'm not really sure. So all of that still has to be seen. But if we don't have the testing capabilities to safely reopen, which the medical experts seem to think we don't yet, then I'm just really not sure how long this reopening is going to last and whether we have to shut the economy down again. There seems to be little appetite for that, and it is an election year, so there's lots of political considerations, but we'll have to wait and see. The other thing to think about is that the severity of the recession and how swift the recovery is going to be, as I believe I mentioned last time on your program, all depends on how much more policy actions we take. In a way, there is really no recession that is bad enough for the government not to be able to combat it. And we have the tools. It's just that we usually don't like to use those tools.
You know, the election that will be important, and the Democrats are surely going to run on, if not both sides are going to run on it, I suspect, that the Democrats probably have a better traction with it on actually helping the working class, and they won't use the working class word, the middle class, mm-hmm. Everybody's middle class in this country, helping the middle class with some kinds of medical programs to reduce the enormous expenses, maybe talk about housing and the rest, and also making sure that people have income. Democrats are going to run on expanded unemployment insurance, and the Republicans may even do that themselves. Who knows? But when they get into office, I don't think they're going to do it. You know, most of the people who get office and the political establishment still believes that if you really spend money, you get inflation, but they're worried about that, and they're worried that you've got to really prod people and force them to work, that safety net programs lead to indolence. This is KABU Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, your old mobile variety hour. Note the variety is in a variety of struggles coming from below in this increasingly tumultuous period. I'm talking to Yevhen Narcissian, a progressive economist studying the government economic response to COVID, writing about what must be done. We so far discussed that the economy, as COVID fades, maybe some, maybe not, it will create great troubles for most people in their country, and there might be political potentials, that is, if movements are able to force the policymakers into doing something substantial. And if there was a sort of presidential executive apparatus that really wanted to do a Green New Deal, those things are all up in the air. You have a conservatives think, as I pointed out, and most liberals believe a couple of things. One, that if you have a generous safety net, like universal medical care and also dental care and pharmaceuticals paid for, and also guaranteed jobs and housing, that many, even most, will just accept the free ride and get habituated to lives of shiftlessness and indolence, laziness, drugs. What's to prevent that? Where does discipline come from? And why is that story so false?
Yeah, well, I think that's a very pessimistic view of humans, and I would say historically inaccurate view of human beings, right? Because ultimately we had to work for our survival, and it's hard to believe that the species that had to work to be able to survive is averse to working. And we see evidence of that people like to be productive, that people like to be useful, people volunteer, right, and help their community. So we see people doing those kinds of things. We also see European nations that have much stronger social safety nets, and people still work there, right? It's not like that Europeans sit on the couch all day and just munch off the government. I mean, they do have longer vacations and they have more leisure time, maybe shorter work weeks, like France has a 35-hour work week. So they have more time to live. And perhaps that's something we should aspire to as well. Maybe we should aspire to shorter work weeks. And perhaps we should aspire to an economy that creates the kinds of jobs that people want to do, rather than creating very bad jobs and then holding this, sticking over people's heads, the stick that they have to work to be able to get health insurance and other things like that. You know, we hold that over people's heads so that they will work. We're basically forcing them to work, right? So I don't think this argument is true that people will not work if they get better safety net. The safety net at the end of the day is the minimum, and people aspire to doing better than others. We do have that competitive edge in us, right? So, yeah, I don't buy that argument at all.
This is KB Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, your old mobile variety hour. I'm talking to Yevhen Narcissian, a progressive economist studying the government economic response to COVID. Let's go through just a list of the kinds of jobs that would be, there probably will be some good deal of unemployment coming up in the next several years. What are the kinds of jobs that should be developed and financed in the coming economy?
Right. Well, I think the kind of jobs we can think of is just limited by our creativity and imagination. But I would say that we need to strive create green jobs. My colleague Pavlina Chernova, who's at Bard College, she's written a lot about the job guarantee. She has a book out on the job guarantee. I think it's titled The Case for a Job Guarantee. And she has argued that we need to think of these as care jobs. So care for humans, but also care for the environment. And these also happen to be jobs with a low carbon footprint and jobs that require a lot of workers, but not as much capital and other overhead, basically. So we can think of everything from environmental cleanup to caring for the elderly, playground monitors, or even weathering homes, making homes more and offices more energy efficient, So when we think of the job guarantee, for example, we don't think of, you know, the large infrastructure projects. Although when people think of government jobs, that's the first thing that comes to mind, right? Building bridges and so on. And that has to happen, but a lot of that will probably happen through unionized workers. So if you need to build more solar panels, if you need to build more wind turbines, if you need to build a new electric grid and a new public transportation, you know, infrastructure and so on, all of that, the government will be paying for it, right? But it won't be necessarily directly hiring the workers. It can rely on private sector workers, currently unionized workers, and so on. And anybody else who's left after that can then participate in the kinds of jobs that I just mentioned. But the federal government will be footing the bill for all of these jobs associated with greening the economy. And I'm not a big fan of subsidizing the private sector, you know, giving incentives to private sector firms, hoping that they will green the economy. That we've tried that before. It doesn't necessarily work. And we don't have a lot of time to get the climate change issue wrong. Now, the Green New Deal has to be comprehensive because a lot of the issues that our society faces today are interrelated, so we need to approach them comprehensively. And the comprehensive approach is also useful. And I'll give a simple example for that. If you think about Medicare for All, for instance, it will eliminate the private insurance industry, and it will also eliminate a lot of jobs associated with billing and administration of healthcare, basically. So people who work in doctor's offices to do billing, or people who work in insurance companies to do billing and all of that. So all of those jobs will disappear. If you were just instituting Medicare for All, then you would be creating all of this unemployment, because in macroeconomic terms, basically, you're withdrawing spending from the economy, so it's deflationary, so you would be creating unemployment. But if you're coupling that with greening the economy, then you will need these people, right? Because somebody will need to work in administration for the Green New Deal. So you could hire these people who are basically freed up. These are resources that are freed up from the Medicare for All, and you can hire them in, you know, greening the economy. So it is important to do it comprehensively, partly because these issues are related, but also for macroeconomic reasons, because some of these programs will be releasing resources, in other words, creating unemployment. Others will be needing more workers, so they will be creating employment. And so the two, if you can phase programs in, so the two offset each other, then you can accomplish this without much macroeconomic disturbance.
Right. One final issue. You talked about greening the economy and creating a different energy economy, but you also talked about having to have a new grid, and the employment would come from the private sector. My sense is that the private sector, and particularly the investor-owned utilities, but also the finance and the financiers of the industrial-owned utilities, that if we're relying on the private sector, we are never going to be able to deal with climate change. The big continent-spanning grids, big remote wind farms, that's basically reproducing the system that we have now. It's monopoly centralized control in every state of the electric system, with some exceptions, wonderful exceptions, like the public utilities in lots of places. But it seems to me we have to be moving much more towards, and I think this is at least the visionaries of energy, unlike the despicable Michael Moore movie, unfortunately, are moving towards local clean energy, very cheap, very reliable, because it doesn't rely on big pylons and all the rest. It's not going to be destroyed in a storm. There's the turbines and the solar panels have become far more efficient. Every county in California has enough sun and wind, as well as land, wasted land, parking lot land, rooftops, all of the rest, to have enough solar panels and wind turbines to power. And they're confederated, so they're confederated across the region. You need a regional grid, but not this going over mountains and going through farmland and the kind of interstate system that's envisioned by the energy industry. I wonder how you respond to that. The private sector is not interested in really changing the way it operates. GM is not ready to move towards transit, they will a little bit if they can make some money at it and greenwash doing it. But they want to keep their system, and the investor-owned utilities, and especially their financiers, like Goldman Sachs and all the rest of them, you know, utility finance is the backbone of the financial system. Every rich person is invested in utilities because they get, you know, 5% a year or whatever they get. It's a hefty return because it's a monopoly and they're guaranteed. It seems to me we cannot rely on the private sector to act quickly enough. They'll start going towards green energy.
No.
They don't like the fossil fuel companies. They have no loyalty to the buggy whip makers or the fossil fuel companies, but they want to maintain their system of control and profit. And that's in transportation, it's in agribusiness, it's in all of those people are not going to move quickly enough towards anything. You know, they can't strand assets for one reason.
Yeah, I didn't mean we need to rely on the private sector for any of this. That was, I just meant that we can't rely on, you know, unionized workers, not necessarily just the unemployed, right? So that's what I meant. So for instance, if you need to build a bridge, you need people who know how to do it. And those people are probably already employed, right? So it's not like they're just unemployed and you just hire them away. So that's what I meant. And also, you don't want to do this program in a way that disenfranchises union workers. So you don't want the government to basically hire the unemployed workers for these programs because they can pay them less. You do want them to rely on unionized workers. So that's basically what I meant. And of course, the private enterprise operates for monetary gain. That's how it is. And the government shouldn't operate, although sometimes it does, with the same logic. The government should operate with the logic of enhancing the public purpose. So that's what we need to basically bring back into the equation. In a way, it seems to me that in the United States, we've forgotten that the government can be a force for good. And this is a lesson that we learned during the Great Depression and even in World War II, that the government can be a force for good. And perhaps with the COVID crisis, if it lasts long enough, will help Americans relearn that lesson. Now, I'm not very optimistic, but that's one possibility that we can see again that the government is trying to help, you know, through unemployment benefits, through helping small businesses and so on. You know, the public health response, of course, it's clear that it has to be coordinated. Otherwise, it's sort of piecemeal and it doesn't really work. The lockdowns, right? All of that has to be coordinated, although it hasn't been necessarily. But we're learning the value of the public, hopefully. And maybe that's a lesson that will carry over. I'm not very optimistic about the prospects of a Green New Deal. If we had a Bernie Sanders on the ballot in November, maybe I would have been, or I would have been, not maybe. But right now I'm not. So even if Joe Biden wins, I don't think there's any chance of a Green New Deal happening. And I think the 8 years of the Obama presidency gave us a President Trump. So who knows what 4 years of a Biden presidency will give us after that, right? So in a way, it's like we're in a fork in history, and we can go left or right. I'm not very optimistic about us going to the left for now.
Yeah. Well, Yevhen Nasisyan, thanks for talking to us today. There's so many important issues that humanity faces now. We'll talk again. Have a good month of June.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Thank you. Hi, folks. Bill Resnick again. The interview you just heard with Yevhen Nasisyan ran out of time and ended on a note of pessimism. Yes, we are in deep trouble, but there's good reason for some optimism. Joe Biden, he will try to continue on a policy of socialism for the rich and precariousness and anxiety for most, destitution for some. But Obama was also orthodox on the economy, but he and the Congress were forced to enact a stimulus with over $100 billion for clean energy development. And in the next stimulus package under Biden and maybe even Trump, we can get even more for clean local sun and wind energy. For me, this would be important. For when the people here and around the world wake up to the threat of climate change, demand action, and they see models of clean local energy and electrified transit in their neighborhood and cities, they might join us in mass movements to demand democratic and sustainable local public energy projects and win them. Optimism of the will and intellect. brought to you on KBOO Radio, Another Better World is Possible.
There's a war going on outside we ain't safe from, and I hope it don't stay long. Came from a bat and a snake done. Coronavirus is a pagan. Gotta stay safe, cause I ain't dumb. Got the life so with me, I got my spray on. Can't leave your house for your day job. And some people now are getting laid off. It's mud, everything mud. Everywhere we go, everybody's in a mask. I went to Sainsbury's just to get bug roll. All sold out, I'm like, what? No. Cause I ain't trying to see no one. NHS is a mad thing, please don't come. Most food stores for sure ain't got a lot now. Can't go abroad, the schools are on lockdown. So please don't cough around me, keep your salivas. Keep it. Pasta and rice has gone, no hand sanitizers. Try ordering at Disney Lee, but there was no drivers. I'm trying to catch some flights, not coronavirus. Corona. Well, I would if I could do. Yeah, that's what I should do. Yeah. But they cancel my flights to Miami and Cancun. Yeah. So I'm not in a good mood. No, don't touch me. Big sis needs an apology, cause I'll be on one, like I'm in quarantine. One man had to change up a whole lot of plans. Stress. Will you go by your business? Wash them hands.
Wash them hands. Woo! Wash them.
You better know better. Social distancing from my friends. I ain't having no one over again. Beg your brethren, don't visit. Trust me, dog, I can't risk it. I was on the timeline scrolling, like, what is this? Not my Idris. I can't believe this. What is going on?
What's going on?
Mother's Day, and I can't see my mom. Pub shut down, now bare man I vex. Gym's closed down, now how you gonna flex? Flex for the world can't be seen tested, so you don't even know if you're infected. Most think it's a joke, they're not interested. Still going out, carry on till you get sick. Wait, people are really still going out raving? Huh? That's outrageous. One cough, we're done your dance. Just stay in. Do a crossword, start painting.
Start painting.
You don't wanna see a paramedic. Bars hit your way harder than the pandemic. Everybody's in a frenzy and a panic. Can't stop washing my hands, become an addict. So please don't cough around me. Keep your salivas.
Keep them.
Pasta and rice has gone, no hand sanitizers. Try ordering at Disney Lee, but there was no drivers. I'm trying to catch some flights, not coronavirus.
Corona.
Wash them hands.
Wash them hands.
Wash them hands.
You better wash them hands.
Wash them hands.
Woo!
Wash them hands.
You better wash them hands.
You better, you better, you better. You better, you better, do better. You better, you better, you better. You better, you better, know better. Trust me, know exactly how you feel. Surf the net and maybe watch a film. Now I got a quarantine to chill. Now I got a quarantine to chill. Yo, trust me, know exactly how you feel. Surf the net and maybe watch a film. Now I got a quarantine to chill. Chill.
Chill.
But on a serious one though, we need to wash our hands more, you know. Spread love, not viruses. Tell Miss Rona she's cancelled.